I'm going to be talking about second chapter of Skillful Means, Lotus Sutra. But a little scholarly background first. I think it's working. Yeah. Thanks, Doug. Yeah. Perhaps we've given that instruction to ourselves from time to time, right? Just let go. Just drop everything. Just let go of the duality. All right. I remember doing that in high school, like 50 years ago. I was reading a little Lankavatara Sutra, and this is like 1967 or something. And Alan Watts, anybody read Alan Watts? So I was just sitting there going, okay, I don't think I was in Lotus or anything, but maybe kind of. And I just sat there and going, okay, I'm dropping everything. And then waited for it to happen. Okay, okay, I did it now. Okay. Nothing happened. I should have figured out something then, but I didn't. But that's Prajnaparamita Sutras, in a way, are just always pointing to that completely unconditioned nature, just complete emptiness of anything from its own side, emptiness of any kind of conceptual elaboration. It's a very difficult practice, but at the right time and the right place, hearing it from the right person, it can be liberating. It's the right, if we're open to hearing, if we've created the right situation, hearing it from the right teacher, then it can be liberating. But generally, it's hard to hear. Like, it's hard to hear from, like, friends, relatives, lovers, partners. When we're doing something and someone says, you know, just drop it, okay? Maybe they're saying it in a kinder way, like, you know, it might be easier if you kind of just let that one go. Or maybe even tougher, like, get over it. Okay. when we're really attached to something, it sometimes makes us hold on even more, right? Someone says, get over it, or let go, or let's say we've had a particular loss that's very painful, which we've all had. You know, we don't want to hear someone say, well, you know, gosh, what, just let go. You know, or something even tougher, like, well, everyone dies and, you know, things are impermanent. You know. But at the right time, the right place, when we're ready, of course, with everything that we've worked through, digested, matured from, we have let go of it. So that wisdom mind of being able to be right on the spot and just see the delusion or let go of something, just see it suddenly. That's Prajnaparamita Sutras, many. Very sudden in a way. You either kind of get the joke or you don't, right? There are other sutras that are equally direct, immediate, and sudden, but come from a whole different place. And that's one of those main ones, of course, is the Lotus Flower, the Good Law, the Lotus Sutra. So it's kind of different. Just accept that you're a Bodhisattva Buddha, just right now. Accept the teaching, just accept it right now. That can be hard too. We thought letting go was hard, and now accepting hard, right? It's ironic. There are a number of different sutras like the Lotus Sutra that point to kind of positive acceptance. They're still sudden, they're still immediate, they're still highest truth, like Lotus Sutra, but they're just kind of just like, this is the truth. So one of those that is popular East Asia and in Tibet, Vimalakirti Sutra. Stainless renown, Vimalakirti. So I had the good fortune of, how long ago was 1977? Is that 40 years ago? Is that right? Yeah, okay. So 40 years ago, I was living in a Zen monastery, and Bob Thurman came to give a talk, and he had just translated Vimalakirti Sutra. I don't think it was even in bound book yet, you know? So I think that's the text that most people use. Not, you know, the Chinese text, there's translations from the Chinese, but Thurman's translation from the Tibetan. So that's also a sutra with Manjushri and Vimalakirti and the Bodhisattvas pointing to direct nature of reality. It's more like, it's just like this. Ta-ta-ta, just like that. Or Tathagata, just like that, just like that. So that's a little different too. Like, it's not accept or reject, is it? Before thinking, you heard it. You didn't have a chance to say, I'm going to let go, or I'm going to accept that, right? Just simple like that. But it's so simple, we go, okay, well, what's that got to do with my problems at home? Yeah, so... actually, Lotus Sutra has that too. Heart Sutra, Parsamparamita have that just immediate also. There's also a sutra which is not as well known in Tibet, the awakening of the Mahayana faith. Sometimes it's translated as awakening faith in the Mahayana, but a little closer Chinese, Japanese would be awakening of the Mahayana faith. And that's a sutra that talks about a Buddha nature, which is a translation. We use the term in America, Buddha nature. The Tibetans translate it as Sugata, so the kind of one of the terms for the Buddha. And the Chinese and other terms are using Tathagata Garbha, the matrix, the womb of the thus, the one that comes thus and goes thus. It's a beautiful term, one who comes thus and goes thus. That's how the Buddha actually referred to himself. He said, I'm the one that comes thus and goes thus. So that sutra really talks about how complete confidence and faith in our Buddha nature is aroused. There's also one other sutra that maybe at some point we'll go through called The Lion's Roar of Queen Srimala. The Lion's Roar of the Queen Srimala. So Lotus Sutra actually has all of these. It has discussion about emptiness, discussion about the immediacy of the Vimalakirti Sutra, the wisdom you can't accept or reject. It has the faith of awakening, the Mahayana faith. It has talking about how Buddhists and Bodhisattvas are formed. Although it doesn't specifically use the term Tathagatagarbha, it's interesting. But if, for people that are reading the stories of the Lotus Sutra by Gene Reeves, which I recommend as a companion, then he talks a lot about Buddha nature. And then finally, the other sutra, which is important along the same lines, is the Parinirvana Sutra. In some traditions, like that's the last full teaching the Buddha gave, the Parinirvana Sutra, obviously, because then he went into Parinirvana. So in the Parinirvana Sutra, the Buddha says, well, I just want to tell you guys, it's been really good, and here's the deal. It's permanent. It's unchanging. It's self. The Buddhism, you know, just kind of lays out all the things that from one level we think, oh, well, I thought everything was impermanent. No, it's permanent. I thought there was no self. No, there's self, you know. So he just kind of lays it out in that way. So for those people that need to hear the truth from the standpoint of permanence, right? Sometimes people go around thinking, I have no self, I have no self. Or, so the Buddha said, for some people who are attached to no self, I have to teach self. For some people that are attached to self, I teach no self. So at some point we'll go over Parinirvana Sutra. But that skillful means that the Buddha talks about in the Parinirvana Sutra is what we're going to talk about tonight. Definitely one of the most important chapters in Lotus Sutra and one of the most important concepts in Mahayana Buddhism, which is skillful means, upaya in Sanskrit. Is that enough scholarly for people? You need a little bit of that, you know. It's important every once in a while, you know, like where does this all come from? Bob Thurman's a very dynamic teacher, if anybody's ever seen him or heard him. I mean, even his book's dynamic, but he's also very, you know, a really brilliant, kind person. But I had a chance to hang out with him, and he had a glass eye, you know. And it's interesting. So I'm very nosy, and I'm always kind. So I said, well, what's the story with your glass eye? And it was a motorcycle accident. Yeah. So I said, are you still, you know, I was a therapist back then. I said, are you still riding motorcycles? He said, no. He said no. But if we can, it's interesting to meet the translators because, you know, as Gene talks about in the stories and a little bit online, you know, a lot of times the translator has to make some choice. What word are we using to describe certain things and what words carry resonance? I usually agree with, like, I like reading Thurman's translations, but in one case, like the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is a nickname, the Liberation Through Hearing in the Bardo, he translates Dakini as angels. Dakinis are the, you know, wisdom when it takes female form and initiating kind of deities. So, I don't know, you know, like why angels? Because that has a lot of associations, right? I'm not against angels. I like angels, but the kitties generally don't have large swan wings or anything. Anyway. But skillful means. Skillful means. But you don't have to agree with the skillful means. That's the point I'm trying to make. Like somebody else, like Robert Thurman, could think, well, that's really skillful. But you might think, you know, for me, it's not that skillful. Would, you know, I need to hear Dakini as like the way the Tibetan's translated as, you know, sky goer, right? Any Star Wars fans? That's where you got Luke Skywalker, you know, Kondro. Okay, so skillful means means you don't always have to totally agree with it. That's the neat part about it, you know. Well, you don't have to agree with anything. Buddhists will debate about anything, but that's the neat thing about it. Like, skillful means are open to interpretation. So it's page 75. I'm just going to do a little reading transmission. And at that time, the world-honored one rose calmly from concentration and said to Shariputra, "The wisdom of Buddhas is both profound and immeasurable, and the gateways to this wisdom are hard to understand and hard to enter. No Shravaka or Pratyeka Buddha can apprehend it." Why is this? It is because every Buddha has been closely associated with hundreds of thousands of billions of Buddhas in the past, fully practicing the way of the immeasurable Dharma of all the Buddhas. Boldly and diligently working, they have become famous everywhere, fulfilling the very profound, unprecedented Dharma and teaching it wherever opportunities arose. Yet their intention is difficult to grasp. Shariputra, ever since I became a Buddha, I have used a variety of causal explanations and a variety of parables to teach and preach, and countless skillful means to lead living beings, enabling them to give up their attachments. Why? Because the Tathagata has attained full use of skillful means and practice of insight. Shariputra, the insight of the Tathagata is broad and great, profound and far-reaching, immeasurable and unobstructed. His power, his courage, his meditation, his liberation, and his concentration have enabled him to enter into the boundless and to fulfill the unprecedented Dharma. By making a variety of distinctions, Shariputra, the Tathagata is able to teach with great skill, cheering the hearts of all with gentle words. In some, Shariputra, the Buddha has fulfilled the whole Dharma, innumerable, unlimited, unprecedented teachings. But this is enough, Shariputra. No more needs to be said. Why? Because what the Buddha has achieved is most rare and difficult to understand. Only among Buddhas can the true character of all things be fathomed. This is because every existing thing has such characteristics, such a nature, such an embodiment, such powers, such actions, such causes, such conditions, such effects, such rewards and retributions, and yet such a complete fundamental coherence. And for those that are reading, again, he speaks it in verse. I kind of like that, you know. If we read the verse, we actually get something a little bit different. You know, so you don't want to skip the verses. So there's some really important things in here where I'm going to be a little scholarly tonight. No Shravaka or Pratyeka Buddha can apprehend it. Is the Buddha being uninclusive and sectarian, you know? Let me give a little scholarly on Shravaka. Shravaka generally means hearer, technically. And sometimes it's meant to refer to monks, sometimes not. I would say Shravaka for us would be, someone just listening. Someone maybe like ourselves, just listening, not adding anything particular to it. Just listening. And Pratitya Buddhas are people that, beings that kind of figure things out on their own. There were many people that yogis in India who, they, from the Buddhist point of view, they had some understanding of emptiness, some understanding of interdependence, some understanding of self. But the Buddha now is saying, well, they can't get this infathomable truth. So right away, the Lotus Sutra is being a little bit, polemical, a little bit debating, you know. In fact, if people have read on, some people, when the Buddha started preaching here, did some people get up and leave? Right? Is anybody going to leave tonight? Maybe. I don't know. So going back to originally what I was talking about, scholarly, is that the Buddha is going to say some really outrageous things that in the sutra, not just here, but you're already Buddhas, like that, which is really annoying to hear, right? Particularly if you've invested a lot in practice. You've given, and you've led a very pure life, and you've given a lot to temples and monasteries and monks and nuns and so forth, and the Buddha saying, you know what, actually, all of you are Buddhas, Bodhisattvas. And on top of that, all you have to do is listen to this sutra, practice it, and that's all you have to do. That's particularly annoying if folks have done a lot of other practices, right? So you come and somebody says, well, I've done all this practice, and then the Buddha goes, well, that was a waste of time. just do this, okay? And then later on, of course, in the rest of the sutra, through all the chapters, people that normally wouldn't be in traditional India wouldn't be gaining enlightenment, are also gaining enlightenment on the spot. One of the famous ones we'll get to is the Dragon Princess, of course. Maybe people haven't read that far. Dragons, nagas, weren't seen as particularly friendly. For starters, they're not human beings. And in traditional monastic settings, women weren't going to become Buddhas. So, not that's what the Buddha said, but in the sutra, in the few chapters I'm skipping ahead, the dragon princess says, I can be a Buddha right now, watch. So she just wakes up on the spot. That's annoying. Okay. So when we say skillful means, lots of times we're talking about, of course, a famous part of the sutra where the Buddha's getting the kids out of the burning house, right? Maybe some of you read that part already. Offering whatever the children want to get out. And that is one of the main skillful means stories of the sutra. But the skillful means starts right away when the Buddha says, well, Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas can't get it. To understand what I'm talking about, you have to be a Buddha. It's kind of a challenge, right? So skillful means involves not just helping, you know, kind of like, okay, I'll help you get out of the house, right? But skillful means and a Dharma setting also includes a challenge. Not just it's going to be okay, but a challenge. That makes sense, right? Usually that's not pointed out in texts, you know? Usually not pointed out that much. Because when people are trying to sell Dharma in America, we're always kind of, no, it's really good. No, just think whatever you want to think. You know, you're just fine as you are. This is California. It's okay. That's not the Lotus Sutra, okay? The Lotus Sutra is going to challenge us to go to our shared heart, which is all our Buddha nature, but it's a challenge, right? Okay. So we have like 2 minutes for questions, and then we should take a break. Don't you think? We should take a break, right? We need a stretch. Yeah. Basically, skillful means involves, you know, gentle words and coaxing words to, you know, like help people. But skillful means also is challenging words.
So he's challenging
them? Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, it was challenging, yeah. Yeah, it's challenging words is also skillful means. Because sometimes, particularly in the Lotus Sutra, well, it's not really in the Lotus, but sometimes in Western Dharma, we don't understand that challenging can be skillful too. Sometimes people need to be challenged. Like, you can do better on this, you know? I need your 100% on this or something. So skillful means works both ways. Good question. Silence means you've understood everything I've said. That's very, very nice. Yeah? Okay. Let's take a 10-minute break. I'll come back and do some guided meditation. Okay, thank you. Very good. And now this chapter, the Buddha's repeating, you know, I'm going to teach something really profound about skillful means, and Shariputra and different folks are saying, hey, this is really great, and, you know, asking three times. So there's a big dramatic build-up, you know. And then finally, we're going to turn to page 82. Then finally at the bottom, second to last paragraph. Then the world-honored one said to Shariputra, since you have now earnestly repeated your request three times, how can I refuse you? Now listen carefully, ponder over what I will say and remember it, for I will explain it for you clearly." When he had said this, immediately some 5,000 monks and nuns, laymen and laywomen, got up and bowing to the Buddha, left the meeting. Why? Because their roots of sin were so deep and they were so utterly arrogant that they imagined themselves to have already attained and borne witness to what they had not actually attained. Having such faults, they could not stay. The world under one kept silent and did not stop them. Then the Buddha said to Shariputra, "Now the congregation no longer has useless branches and leaves, but only firm, good fruit. It is good, Shariputra, that such utterly arrogant ones have gone. So listen carefully now. I am ready to explain it for you." And Shariputra said, "Very well, world-honored one. I am eager to hear you." The Buddha said to Shariputra, "Such a wonderful dharma as this is taught by the Buddha Tathagatas only on very rare occasions, just as the Udambara blossom is seen only very rarely. You should believe me, Shariputra, in the teachings of the Buddhas, nothing is empty or false." So, everything in the Lotus Sutra and Buddhist teachings is understood on different levels. Perhaps there was people that got up and left. I've certainly been at teachings where people have gotten up and left. I remember one teaching in 1971, which I went to with Trungpa Rinpoche. It was at a church, then there was no Karmazong or a building. Didn't own a building at the time. And he was describing ego. And he said that something like, ego is like, being interested in our own shit. Exactly, it wasn't too much different than in 12-step. There's a phrase called slacking, shellacking your shit, And he kind of went on with the metaphor a little bit. He said, in the West you have this paper, and then you look at it and flush it. He was kind of going into it, and a whole bunch of people just got up and left. It was a fantastic teaching, actually. last year I made a Presbyterian joke and one person got up and left, and I thought it was a funny joke. The joke was, there are no Presbyterian jokes. I identified myself as a child Presbyterian. One way of interpreting this, just so the Buddhas aren't being nasty, is and for the meditation we're about to do, is what do we have to ask of ourselves to leave? Okay. This is particularly Mahayana tantric style. So before starting a meditation practice, particularly in Vajrayana, we create a mandala and we create safety. And if we've been to empowerment ceremonies, you might have seen where at the very beginning there's some dharmas or ritual cakes on a plate and a little light and da-da-da-da, and the Gyektor, it's called, and the Lama will say some prayers, and then the attendant will generally take it outside. Okay, this is to ask obstructing influences to leave. Okay. It's a very direct, quick method, saying it's not appropriate here. Likewise, there are certain things that aren't appropriate in our daily life. We don't have a problem telling things or people to leave. It's a quick method, like, it's not appropriate for you to be here right now. Like with kids, in some things it's not appropriate that they be at certain activities, right? Adult activities that, you know, they shouldn't be witnessed to, or they're just noisy and want to play. So, like if we were going to do a meditation and there was, you know, kids running around here, we'd say, you know, we have a dojo community room in the back, you know, go play like that. So you won't appreciate or understanding what's happening. So please, like that. On a more direct level, we're asking those parts of our being to leave which don't want to hear about our Buddha nature. Okay? We're actually saying, we're not just saying, I'm letting go of my negative thinking. I'm parroting, you know. Letting go, I'm working with my negative thoughts. No, we're just very Mahayana style, leave. This is my time, right? You get that? You're planting your flag. You're planting your banner. This is my time to be awake and free. You're not, you know, like that. We're saying that to our obscurations, which are those, that voice that says, you know what, you're never going to get enlightened. You know what, this is Sacramento, nothing really happens here. you know what, you're too old. You know what, you know, just, or like, you've got too much trauma in your life. You know, those, we just ask them to leave. So we're not actually asking for all the experience and the richness of our world to leave, but all the voices that say, you know what, you can't do it. You're not worthy. That those we're asking to leave. We're making a big proclamation like, you know what, we can do this thing. If you don't think you can do it, then you're not, you know, we're going to do this thing. And we're going to jump across this, you know, hole or cavern or something, and we need you on board. So it sounds a little bit harsh, but it's absolutely necessary to establish, you know, some safety and have the ability for realizations to happen. Like, you don't want, like, poison in your food, right? You know, you'd say leave. You don't want, you know, there's certain things where we really, really want it safe. We want a strong container. We want to know that everybody's, you know, on board, right? So in this style of Mahayana teachings, very direct style, just leave. Or like, I'm going to teach the truth. So, and so sometimes the obscurations, they just leave of their own. So don't, when they leave of their own, don't go running after them, okay? Sometimes when the light turns on, then we go, oh, I'm so sorry for the darkness. Gosh, I'll turn the light back off. No. So when we proclaim truth to ourselves, I can do this, I can, you know, be free, then when they leave, don't go chasing after them. Do you know that thing where we have nostalgia, you know? I don't know. I'm thinking Trungpa Rinpoche today, because it's a lot like the Buddha and the Lotus, which are like, he said,